All right. So we were talking about what people could be addicted to, and in the video it was all basically social media and stuff. But as you can see from here, obviously people get addicted to other things. And what's an addiction? Like, what's a definition of it if you had to define it to somebody? Something that controls you. Okay. Anybody else have any other definitions they want to share? Something dependent on, can't be without.
And if it's like something that you get so attached to that you're unable to go about your normal day or like your everyday
tasks. Did everybody hear? So something that you,
I just said it's something that you're so attached to that it almost inhibits you from any kind of regular everyday task that you're trying to complete or that you go about normally.
Perfect. So some people are addicted to their phones, to their social media account. Some people have other addictions. Some people it could be just work, it could be school. Some people it's something that they eat. I don't know if anybody can relate to me. This is me pretty much. So this is my addiction, and it meets kind of all the definitions that you said, is that you can't really function without it, and you're very dependent on it, and you kind of get really angry without it, or it makes life really difficult if you don't have it, and it just kind of consumes you to getting there. So I don't want to give you the Sunday school answers that you guys already know. If I stand here and I tell you to disconnect from the world, by what are the typical answers? Deactivate Facebook, turn your phone off, go for a walk, the typical stuff that you've heard. But I'm just going to give you kind of a three-part mini test that I developed, and then hopefully from there you can make a decision on if what you're addicted to, if you are addicted to something, is something that maybe you want to stay addicted to, or if it's maybe a change that you want to make. So it's a choice that you make at the end of the day. But you know, you've gone through 12 years of Sunday school and then a few years, some of you of youth group, of hearing kind of the typical sort of, you know, get off your phone, go play outside, go for a walk, go have coffee with your friends, just don't keep texting. You know all those answers already. So the first part of the test is, first you have to know what you're addicted to. So I can't say everybody has an addiction. Everybody would know what they're addicted to if they are addicted to something. So I'll use myself as an example. So for example, my addiction is the coffee or whatever. So the first test is, does my addiction or worldly connection come at the expense of someone or something else? So sometimes what we're addicted to, we don't realize, but comes at somebody else's expense, even if we don't realize it. So it could be somebody's expense that's not even here, that's not even in this country. So an example can be, I put H&M, Zara, Forever 21, they're called fast fashion stores. And the reason is shirts are like $4, you know, pants are what, $15, $20, you can walk out with a full outfit for like under $50. But that comes at an expense, because somebody in India or somebody else somewhere else is working their fingers off for pennies a day, if at that, to be able to get that fast fashion in place. So every time that I go and I buy something from those stores, I've contributed to that without even realizing it. So at the end of the day, when I have to face God, I'm going to have a part to play in that, even though I don't think it. So if I have to upgrade iPhones regularly, or Samsungs, or iPads, or computer, or whatever it is, if I always have to have the top of the line model, or my screen got scratched, so I have to go and get a brand new phone right away, again, I've contributed to that. And the goal for me isn't to say, you know, don't go buy a smartphone or don't go and go shopping. But these are all things that you need to factor in, is the item I'm buying, is it at somebody else's expense? So one thing is education. In our culture, we like education. Everybody wants like letters before and after their name, right? So that's something that we keep in mind. Is that coming at the expense of my parents having to work longer than they should? Because now I finished this graduate program and I know I want to get another master's degree and now I want to go get a PhD and do this and that. Is it coming at the expense of my family? So if I have a family, is it getting in the way of that? a couple years ago, I was offered to go and do, it was a condensed master's program through Harvard, and it was a really great experience, but I would have had to sell my house and leave my family for at least a year. So did something come at the expense of something else? So sometimes we don't recognize that right away. The bottom is somebody proposing, and the price tag on it is like $10,500. So that can come at the expense of two individuals at the end of the day. So is the fact that I want eventually a bright, big diamond ring, and somebody is working somewhere in a country for pennies a day or going through a lot of stuff just so that I can wear a big, you know, shiny diamond on my ring, that's coming at somebody else's expense, even though that's something I may not have thought of. Same thing for the person who's going to buy the diamond ring. So that person has had to maybe miss church or work a lot of extra hours or put in a lot of time just to be able to afford that ring. So are my expectations with my family, so do I expect my parents to go buy me the nicest of everything? When I'm going to buy my university books, I remember this was always a debate at our house. Do I buy the brand new ones or do I buy the used ones, which are significantly a lot less? So again, it's I'm faced with a decision. So go back to your first question being, does my addiction or worldly connection come at the expense of someone or something else? Okay. There's a verse in James, I'm sorry for the color, it looked better on the computer. There's a verse in James that says, you have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. So very straightforward verse, okay? So do I eat a slice of cake or do I eat the whole cake? Okay, so corner picture. This is actually like a true story. So do I is it enough for me to have a slice of cake or do I have to go for seconds and thirds? It's the night before Siyam. Do I have to go to Mandarin and sushi and go all out? Okay, and I don't like when people touch the iPad at sushi because then I don't have control over what's ordering and they may not order enough. Okay, so again, a really big problem. Everything, candy, sugar, all that stuff. So I used food as the bottom example. It's just a personal example, but another one can be brand names. So again, and I think it's a decision to be made. Do I go and buy the $4 shirt, or do I maybe go and buy something a bit more quality? But does everything have to be super high-end, and does everything have to be, you know, top of the line, best of the best? So again, a decision to be made when you're looking at something. The next part of the test, or the second question, is does my addiction or worldly connection help me escape reality? And if it does, that's a big problem. Okay, so it says a lot if you are standing talking to someone, but you're on your phone, even if you're just scrolling through Facebook or your Instagram or Snapchatting or whatever. The fact that you're on your phone, basically, you're physically standing there, but you're not mentally there. So A, it's a sign of disrespect, most likely, to the person that you're with, and B, it's a very clear message that you're miserable in life. If you can't consciously be where you are, both mentally and physically, that speaks a lot. And yes, we can say the devil has a part to play. So I might be standing in church during Mass, and all of a sudden I'm thinking of my to-do list for the day and a bill I haven't paid and an exam I have to study for and somebody I didn't call back. But if I'm not consciously able and mentally able to focus on where I'm at and what I'm doing, that says a lot about my personality and my happiness, and sometimes we don't recognize that. people escape reality through the different things. Fantasy football. What is that? Why can't you go play with your friends? Like, physically go play with your friends. If I'm really big on, it could be anything. It could be video games. It could always be updating my Facebook feed. So sometimes you're on your phone on Facebook, and then you got your tablet in front of you and your computer, and they all have Facebook open because one might just load the picture a little bit faster, okay? Or I'm refreshing it, but nothing's happened, and I refreshed it at 2 in the morning, and now I'm refreshing it at 7 in the morning, and there's a good chance that nothing's happened in those 5 hours because most sane people are sleeping during those hours. But in my head, I have to kind of always be in the know and remove myself from where I physically am to somewhere else. So ask yourself, is whatever I'm addicted to, is it helping me escape reality? So is the fact that I get really hangry at work with everyone if I haven't had my caramel macchiato in the morning because it makes me kind of, you know, don't talk to me until I've had that, because I can't deal with reality until I've had that, that speaks a lot. And the third question, it's a short lesson today. So the third part of the test, or the final question to ask yourself, and you can ask the three questions in any order. They're not made in a specific order, but whatever your addiction or connection to should be able to pass the three questions that we went through. So the third one, does my addiction or worldly connection allow me to keep the ultimate commandment? And I know the writing is really small, so it's not letting me enlarge it. What are the two ultimate commandments? If you want to cheat, it's the Mark 12 one. So the first commandment is that you love the Lord with all your soul, and the second commandment is that you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So basically love God and love your neighbor as yourself. So the ultimate commandment is love. So does my addiction or worldly connection or whatever I really, really enjoy, does it get in the way of me fulfilling the commandment of love? And one way to know that is, for example, in Galatians 5, verse 19 to 21, several sins are listed. And sometimes you read through them quickly and you're like, well, I'm not an adulteress, so I'm fine. You know, I'm not doing any sorcery or idolatry. So in my head, checklist, I'm good. I haven't done anything. Drunkenness, murder, heresies, these are really intense things. I haven't done them, so I'm good. But in the, between those, we see things like jealousy. We see outbursts of wrath. We see selfish ambitions. So those will tie into me always having to have the best of the best, me having to get several educations and several degrees. And so we tend to look at the big ones like, okay, I don't murder, I don't, you know, I'm not adulterous, I'm not drunk, I'm whatever. So we categorize them, and in our head, we have, as long as I've maybe met the majority of them or most of them, then I'm good, the other ones don't matter. And so sometimes with your social media, even if you don't admit it, oftentimes, like we saw in the video, so is this person always on vacation? No, this person's always eating at the nicest restaurants. This person is always out. This person's always shopping at the best place. So these are all things that, even though we don't consciously realize them or may not specifically say them regularly, at the end, they end up in our head. So it's, why is that person always on vacation, not me? Why is that person happier in their relationship than me? Why is that person have more friends, cooler friends than me? So again, the jealousy thing comes in. So one other example, I find it an interesting one. So James 5:12, he says, but above all, do not swear either by heaven or earth or any other oath. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. And we're very big in our culture on, do you swear? Oh, okay, it's not enough to say what you said. You have to go swear an affidavit in front of a lawyer. What does it mean when somebody comes to swear an affidavit? Most of the time, it's people I don't even know. All I say to them, do you swear that you're saying the truth? And they say yes. It means absolutely nothing. So a lot of times when I have to talk to my friends or something, I should be conscious of my yes be yes and my no be no. I shouldn't have to say, yeah, totally, legit, I promise, for real. Because what does that mean about the rest of the stuff that I haven't said? Does it mean if I don't stamp everything with I promise, or legit, or real talk, or whatever the cool lingo is at the time, does that mean that what I said isn't accurate? So it says a lot. So you shouldn't walk around expecting people. So if you, I expect every time that I talk to Mima, if she doesn't say I promise, or I swear to God, or whatever term she wants to use, or some cultures will use wallahi, or whatever other term, so if she doesn't add that to everything she says, then I'm going to be like, oh, but she didn't say I promise, so maybe she's lying about that. So the fact, if I'm hanging out with friends where I can't trust that their yes is yes and their no is no and whatever they say is correct, then A, maybe I should check my friends, and B, I have to check if I'm doing it as well too. Real talk. So James 5, it's a short chapter, but it ends with, brethren, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will save a soul and death and cover a multitude of sins. So question to you is, how do I turn a sinner away from sin? Big question. How do I do that? Pray for them. I don't want Sunday school answers. Okay, fine. Pray for them. Sure. Prayer is very important. That's fine. But the title of the lesson was non-Sunday school answers. Right, so there's a balance between, like, who are you to tell me versus I'm telling you because I care for you, right? And so we see this sometimes. You might see it in service. Some of you are serving, or you might see it with a friend or something. So if I see someone's doing something inappropriate and I go tell their parent, back in my days, it was a big deal. And your parents would come talk to you and you would get in trouble. Sometimes we tell a parent these days, oh, by the way, we're having this issue. The parent isn't on your side, right? It's... You get defensive. Nobody wants to hear that they're not doing a good job as a parent, or they're not doing a good job in life, or they're not doing something right. So a good way to turn a sinner away from sin is prayer, definitely very powerful. Another way is love. And it sounds so simple, but it's a big deal. So to love someone is super hard. That means I'm putting my pride aside. I'm going to be humble, which is really, really hard for me or for a lot of people in our society. It's a big deal, so I'm putting judgment away, okay? So I have to come from a non-judgmental place. If I can love somebody, eventually that love becomes painful to them, because love comes with a certain amount of humbleness. I can't love without being humble, because I'm stepping on my pride and getting over myself. Eventually that starts to hurt. A lot of times when we, in my line of work, if we're working with parents who have a drug addiction or an alcohol addiction, or their kids have been taken away, or whatever it may be, I can sit and tell them all I want, stop drinking, stop doing that. I can send them to all the rehab they can go to and do whatever programs they can do. But sometimes just being there for them goes a lot longer. And so they're not used to having this love of somebody caring, or somebody checking in on them, or somebody just asking how they're doing without constantly telling them what they're doing is wrong. So you can go to hell by yourself. Like, you don't need a partner to get there. But heaven is going to be impossible for you if you don't have people around you. Because getting to heaven, part of the road is keeping the ultimate commandment, which is love. I need people around me to be able to give them love and to be able to practice humility and to be able to pray for them. If I don't have that opportunity, if I ignore it, you see God in a sinner, right? You see God in everyone around you at the end of the day. If anybody's, for those on my Facebook, there was a video this morning I posted, and it was a little boy, and he goes to a park, and he sits with a homeless lady, and they, like, share Twinkies, and he goes home and tells his mom, I just saw God. I just had Twinkies with God. And the homeless lady walks away, and she goes to see another homeless person, and she has a big smile on her face, and the lady says, why are you so happy? And she said, I just had Twinkies with God. So God is here. He's among us. But if you're constantly expecting, like, the pictures we see with the, like, metallic gold at the back and, like, the shiny, shiny face, that's not necessarily how he's going to be walking around right now, day to day. So if you don't take an opportunity in the world, if you don't take an opportunity now to disconnect from the things that are prioritizing your time, because God's competing for your attention at the end of the day. If we want to call it like it is, several things are competing for your attention. Probably your parents, they want your attention. They want to just sometimes just simply have dinner with you or see how you're doing, and you don't have time for that. Your phone is competing for your attention, your friends, your studies, your work, and then there's God, who gets maybe the last 2 minutes, and then you're too tired for him. But at the end of the day, if you recognize that you need those opportunities that God's providing you to be able to kind of make your way up to heaven, it makes a big difference. So I don't know if that part makes sense, because I want the love and the humility and the fact that you need community with God making sense, or a relationship with God on earth to make sense. Does anybody have questions on that, or was it too confusing? It's hard to, like, explain, but So take opportunities you have, get away from your distractions.
Like, I completely agree with you. Like, Jesus used this very important ingredient, which was love, to turn sinners back. And it was like, it was not like a fake love, it was like true love, and then they sensed it. But we have seen the same Jesus rebuking and judging at the same time. And I think, like, to be realistic in life, we can't use the same recipe with basically every sinner. Like, you know, the worst sinner would be the one who tries to hide behind this facade of just like, you know, I'm righteous. And that's why Jesus always judged and rebuked, like, you know, the Pharisees, even though they were like, you know, the teachers, like, you know, they represented the symbols and the role models, but he rebuked them. So, like, did he love them? Like, I think at the core, yes, because they are human beings. He would love to see them coming back to him. But this same recipe of love and respect sometimes, and I would probably use Fadi's recipe then, that those people, like, you know, if you are in a position of just like, you know, you're responsible and those people are hurting others, then you have to go and talk to them, like, you know, in a strict way. But if you can, and then, like, you still love them, but we're going to just like use the recipe of prayers because, right?
I was just going to say that also encompasses love, because love doesn't, like, love, sometimes we think that love is just like all being happy and everything, but I mean, when Christ rebuked the Pharisees, it wasn't like because he hated them. I mean, he also loved them, right? When our parents discipline us and get mad, it's because they love us. So I guess the main idea is love, but how we deliver that love from person to person is different.
Thank you. I was going to use that example as like when I don't know, when I like freak out at my dog because she's running across the street and I like get really mad at her and she's like, you know, why are you yelling at me? It's out of love, right? If you have a young child and they're running towards the stove and it's on and the parent pulls them away and by accident, you know, hurts them or has to yell at them or has to put them in timeout, it's out of a love. But the people you're closer to, you may get those opportunities to maybe, I don't want to say rebuke, but to maybe have those real talks with them and, hey, you're hurting people and you need, you know, maybe you need help for a certain problem or whatever it may be. But the people that you're farther to, you may not have that opportunity, right? Like someone at work, I may not necessarily go and open up to them about a problem that they have or, you know, and sometimes it's, they're going to find a lot of judgment and they're going to find a lot of, you know, cold shoulders. So if they know that at least one person isn't giving them a dirty look or getting up from the lunchroom when they walk in or whatever it may be. I think like our Christianity sometimes speaks through that way, like our actions rather than, and you're right, like love isn't like most Disney movies, right? It's not like the Enchanted Music where it's easy and flowers and rainbows and all that stuff. But we have to be careful that the love we see like on TV and talk about and we see online isn't actually what it is. Love is actually the effort and the sacrifice, and it's a whole other topic on its own. But just to kind of go back to, we have opportunities throughout life to love people and to shine our light, and we don't show them. So God says, you know, shine and be a light unto the world, for example. So if you look at a lamp, it's a lot brighter where it actually is versus the light it projects. So if I don't have time for my family and to be patient with them, then it's not going to count when I'm, you know, maybe with a stranger or something. I need to start at home, you know, start small and then move out. But if I'm rude to my brother and I have no patience for him and I don't have time to go to have dinner with my parents and they call me and I don't want to answer because they can just text me and all that stuff, well, one day they're not going to be there to call. And one day that phone's not going to ring and say mom or dad or whoever. Sorry for the reality check, but it's true. So if my love is only to strangers, that might be something that I want to focus on as well, too. It it's possible to love those around you, even though family sometimes makes it a lot harder, or friends. But it's a lot easier to see a stranger downtown and give them change in your pocket than to get up and drive a sibling somewhere because they missed the bus, because they didn't listen to you when you said go to bed early. Like, just a random example. So it's a bit of a cycle, and it's like any addiction. So if you're going to stay in denial, then just ignore what I'm going to say, because nothing's going to work for you. You have to recognize whatever your addiction is. So sit with yourself and think tonight, or when you have time, is there anything that I'm really worldly connected to or that I'm addicted to? And if it's something that's going to be in heaven, then great. Like, you're not going to have a problem later. But I remember one time in Sunday school, used to teach the younger grades, and one of the kids asked if there was going to be Burger King in heaven. I was like, no, there is no one. And he was kind of like, well, I don't know that I really want to go there. And he was like so disappointed. And so we get mad when we forget our phone or our phone dies. But what are you going to do without your phone, right? Like, things are going to be a lot better up there. So if I'm addicted to coming to church for the right reasons, or talking and keeping my relationship with God for the right reasons, then it's going to be an easier journey to heaven. And when I get there, it's not going to be a hard adjustment. Like, it's going to be phenomenal. But if I have these constant distractions and I make a choice to not disconnect from them, and I maybe don't end up in heaven, then whoa, is it going to suck down there? So once you've passed denial, you can take those steps. I don't have to tell you the steps of, you know, when you need help, but ask yourself the three questions that we went over, and just disconnect. And disconnect doesn't have to mean turning off your Wi-Fi or turning off your phone. Disconnect can be, maybe my coffee addiction needs, you know, some attention. Maybe the night before a fast, or I don't need to go and pick out at Mandarin, right? If I go to sushi, I can not leave feeling like I'm going to explode and never want to go to sushi again. So just look at what your addiction or connection to, see if it passes the three tests or the three questions we went over, and if it does, then great. This I just threw in because I think it's just a good reminder. I feel really bad for you guys and your generations and your kids and all this stuff, because all this stuff didn't exist. Like, when the servants were kids, this stuff wasn't really around. So we don't have all these choices, right? And you guys have all these constant choices. So when your memory's full on your phone, you make a choice between deleting Coptic Reader and Instagram or Snapchat. So those are choices that I've heard youth have to make. Those are choices I make. Even on a Samsung, the memory gets full sometimes. So those are decisions that you make as an adult with what you keep. And so I say that I feel really bad for you guys, because if you think about it, if I wake up in the morning and I have 30 pairs of shoes, and my cousin has 2 pairs of shoes, that person, even though materialistically I might feel happier with my 30 pairs of shoes, or they look prettier, all, you know, organized, sometimes having less options in front of you makes life a lot easier. So every time I have to now look at 30 pairs of shoes, or I have to choose between 50 shirts versus maybe 10 shirts, I have to add to that choice. So every time I download a new social media app, or I become addicted to something else, it could be somebody else, but anytime I kind of add something in my life that is a possible distraction or interruption, I now have an additional choice to make each minute of my life. So I don't know medically how many decisions they say we make a day, like thousands or something, hundreds or thousands decisions a day that you make even without realizing. So the more you add to them, it's like emotionally draining to just have to constantly be making decisions. So if you can weed out certain things that are disconnecting you, it'll actually do you much good. I don't think I have much more, but if anybody wants to add anything, they're more than welcome to. Father and son. No, but her first.
For the first question, it was like about things coming at someone or something's expense. How do you differentiate between something coming at someone's expense or like versus like a
constant sacrifice that you have to make. Like, someone can be studying all the time. You could be spending less time with your family, but like, it could be something you need to do to succeed, to be able to support your family one day, etc.
I'm saying the forever educator. And it came from, it's actually made from, the example came from a case I had at work where I had a father who had 2 master's degree, PhD, and was doing his other PhD. And him and the wife, it caused overtime separation because, like, problems, because he was never home and shared a teacher and he had 4 kids. So overtime caused a lot of problems. So now they're separating, and unfortunately they find themselves in my office. And his version,
so Nardine, can you go back to the last slide where you put ask, disconnect? And so I have a question for you guys. Like, you know, if I were to ask you to add something between ask and disconnect, what would you add? And actually, Nardine just said it when she answered Beher right now. And I think it boils down to this, to be able to proceed forward in our spiritual life. So if we were to ask, if we were to add one more bullet between ask and disconnect, what would that be? Right? Okay. That's not what I'm, it might be right, but this is not what I am.
I'm guessing the answer is think.
What?
Think.
Well, actually, well, I mean, it's getting closer to what I want. I'm looking for, Mark. Yeah, I'm just like at this phase between ask and disconnect. Nardine was explaining it. Okay, I'm gonna. Can I just like two real examples that in life? So I remember I was working in France, and then there was a doctor, a Muslim doctor, a resident in the department, who at like around noon he would leave the department, and he go pray. Okay. So the French doctors there, for me, I was used to that. Like, you know, it happens all the time in Egypt, right? But the people could not understand that. Like, you know, how come there are people sitting, masalan, screaming that, you know, they have a a sore chest or chest pain, or you know, and then someone left them for half an hour to pray. Now the cause looks like great, like you know, I'm disconnecting from the word for the sake of God, but I'm leaving someone in just like suffering. Okay, so think about this one. The other extreme. Today I went to Apple to check because my battery gets drained very quick. So the lady just like went on my settings, and then she said, "Oh, if you go to battery, and then it's gonna tell you like you know how do you spend your energy." And then she said, "Oh, like the most important one, like you know the one that took most of it, it's this Coptic reader, and it's taking like almost 20% of your battery. Like this is in one day, or so." So I want you to compare those two examples. Like, you know, in the second example, it seems like, you know, I'm using, like, Coptic reader all the time. But it's on just like a gadget that we are trying to disconnect ourselves from. And the other is someone who disconnected from everything and he left people suffering to pray. So by the end of the day, all what I wanted to say is that we need to analyze. Like between ask and disconnect, I need to analyze what's happening actually. And this is what you were saying. So this analysis is very important because if, you know, what I am doing is helping, regardless of what, how much do I spend my time on my iPhone or whatever, like, you know, or the media, if this is truly helping me progressing in my spiritual life, then, you know what, I'm going to continue doing it. And the opposite is true. So I think every time we don't need to just like look at things. We need to be deep. We need to analyze and take it from there.
The last thing I was gonna say, I gotta give credit to Abuna Shnuder because it was one of his focus themes when he took the church trip to Israel last year. One of his focus themes on a lot of the mountains we visited was that Jesus won't make something out of nothing. So you have to do your bit. So for example, like the blind man came up to him and told him, you know, can't see. And he used the mud, you know, or the clay to give him vision. He could have just waved his hand. He could have snapped his fingers. He could have just looked at him. But if we don't give, and it ties into free will, and we can have another lesson on that again if we need to, but God's not going to walk all over your free will and your freedom. So if I don't give a little bit to God, or if I don't ask for some help, so I can say, God, I'm really struggling with my caffeine addiction. And it sounds funny to some people, but it's an actual, like, it's a problem. So if I say, God, I'm struggling with this problem, and I come to him for help, he's likely going to help. It's different than me just saying, he knows I have a problem. He'll just, you know, he'll make it stop when he needs to. So you have to do a little bit to get something from God. So even if it's just a little bit, but he's not just gonna, if you're addicted to your cell phone, he's not just going to, you know, make it fall in the toilet accidentally while you're using it in there and then flush it. Because you're gonna get mad, right? You're gonna be like, God, are you kidding me? Like, you know, my parents just bought me this. But you have to kind of take that step so that meet God halfway, right? It's a relationship at the end of the day. If you're in a relationship with someone where you're putting in no effort at all, it's not going to go very far, very long. Or it's not going to be a very healthy relationship. So you have to kind of, I'm not even going to say meet him halfway, but you got to take that first step. So pass the denial and ask. Pray, and then we have sushi downstairs. Please don't be all gluttonous with it.
Thank you, God, for bringing us tonight. And thank you for sending your words on the Holy Spirit tongue to teach us to analyze our life and to avoid distraction, everything that distracts us from you, from progressing in our spiritual journey more and more towards you. Open our eyes. Give us the will to be strong, to disconnect ourselves, and to be able to say no, and to shine your light to the word, because our journey and our life is too short. We pray for the service. We pray for the fathers, the servants, and all our friends who couldn't make it tonight. For all those people who have tests, help them through the intercession of our Virgin Mary and all the saints who pleased you since the beginning. Hear us when we pray thankfully. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.